for the introduction. So as you said, today I'm going to be speaking about the impact of diet on lead bioaccessibility for wildlife in vitro methods. So humans have put a lot of lead into the environment through all of their uses of lead, through mining, industry, and even though we're starting to phase out lead in a lot of our products, we still have this problem with soil contamination. And now we have thousands of sites with the potential to harm wildlife that we need to go and assess. Because if we find that a site has a high risk, we have to remediate that. And what that normally looks like is removing the soil and replacing it. And this is really expensive, it's time-consuming, and especially for ecological restoration, it's really destructive. So we want to minimize this as much as possible. So when we do our risk assessment, we need to be sure that we're only remediating sites that absolutely need it. So when we get to a site and evaluate risk, we know that the main risk driver for lead in contaminated soil is incidental soil ingestion. So a robin will eat a worm and it has soil inside of it, or maybe a bird is eating seeds off the ground and it is accidentally ingesting soil that way. So we quantify this risk with CDI, our chronic daily intake of lead, and that's how much lead is getting from the environment into the bloodstream. And this is made up of a function of a bunch of different factors, right? We have body weight, soil lead, ingestion rate, and all of these things are relatively constant. A robin always weighs so much, it always eats so much, and there's X amount of lead in our soil. But the one thing that does change is really rather variable is this one factor right here. It's our relative bioavailability. What portion of this lead that I'm ingesting is actually getting into my bloodstream? So if our relative bioavailability is only 50%, that's going to cut our chronic daily intake in half. And that could make the difference between having to remediate a site and not having to do anything at all. And this is particularly important for lead because most lead minerals aren't very soluble to begin with. Only a small portion of the lead you ingest actually gets into your bloodstream. Most of it passes right through you. And bioavailability is further impacted by the food or the diet that it's consumed with. But most of the time, we don't have this information, so we automatically assume that bioavailability is going to be 100% when we do risk assessment, which means that we're probably overestimating our risk in a lot of cases and remediating sites that we don't have to be. So to get this bioavailability data, we can do a dosing study. So we feed an animal a known amount of lead, and we see how much of it gets into its blood. But this is really expensive, it's difficult and time-consuming, and for ecological risk assessment, we have to look at multiple species. So we need a better way to get bioavailability data. And we actually have one. For people, we have simulated the gastrointestinal conditions in lab methods and then correlated them to animal models. And when we do that, we know we can predict the bioavailability of a soil sample of a lead-contaminated soil with these in vitro methods. But there is a catch to using these. We've actually found that we can use these methods for birds. Even though they're developed for people, it has been shown to work on wildlife. But there's a catch when we go to use these for ecological risk assessment. Because when we do human health risk assessment, we're looking at our worst case scenario, right? So a human child is eating dirt on an empty stomach, and they're absorbing a lot of lead that way. But when we do ecological risk assessment, we're more interested in the average scenario, right? Which is this, again, this incidental ingestion with food. And that makes diet the main determinant of bioavailability, not soil. And since these methods were developed for soil, what we wanted to do here was determine the effect of diet on these in vitro bioaccessibility methods. So we use six diets that are commonly used in ecological risk assessment, and we spike them with lead. And we looked at four different in vitro methods that are used for people. The first is a standard method, US EPA 1340. The second is the same method but at a slightly higher pH because birds have a higher gastric pH. And this was found to be correlated. It could predict lead bioaccessibility in feeding studies. We also did OSU in vitro gastrointestinal method, the gastric phase, which was also found to be predictive of lead. And we wanted to see what impacts diet would have in an intestinal extraction. So we did the same method, at pH 6.5. So here's our results. Up here are each of the methods. The pH is below. And all of these numbers you see are the percent recovered lead. So out of the total lead that's in the diet, what percent of that is coming into the solution is soluble? And this represents the bioaccessible lead that's available to be absorbed by your bird or your organism. So in the first and third columns, we have, you can see that most of the lead here is bioaccessible. Most of it has dissolved. And this was expected because at really low pH, lead minerals are generally very soluble. But if you look in the second column here, where we've done the same US EPA method but at a slightly higher pH, we start to see some differences. So if you look at the highlighted values, these diets still had relatively soluble lead. But some of the other diets actually had reductions near 50%. And this is really interesting because our pH 2.5 is again closer to that bird gastric pH. And this was a method that was found to be predictive of bioaccessibility. So This may suggest that when we do these in vitro tests, that diet is going to play a really important role. And then if you look in the last column here, you can see that there's quite a variation, again, in our bioaccessibility. These first couple diets have really insoluble lead. Most of that has precipitated out of solution. And it's interesting because these diets have a lot of phosphorus in them. These are actually ordered by phosphorus content. So this game chow has the most phosphorus, and this hay has the least phosphorus. And you can see what a difference this makes. We go from being almost insoluble to having 50% of our lead still in solution. So what we think is going on here is that organic acids from food can chelate that lead and bring it into solution. But if you have phosphorus in that system as well, it's going to bind that lead and precipitate it out, decreasing your bioaccessibility. And you can see here that it's really strongly correlated. Your diet P is really strongly correlated with bioaccessible lead, which raises the possibility of maybe just using diet phosphorus to predict your bioavailability, which is a much easier test than doing an in vitro analysis. But in order to do that, we need to first see which methods correlate with animal models, and we need to evaluate multiple species to see if there's any differences there. So to wrap it up, we did see that diet impacts in vitro bioaccessibility of lead, and it can increase or decrease depending on the diet and depending on the method. We found a good relationship that of diet phosphorus reducing bioaccessible lead, but we couldn't find any correlations between other dietary components suggesting that there's more complex interactions going on. So in all, this and further research can improve our understanding of how diet impacts bioaccessibility of lead and hopefully improve our risk assessment and reduce remediation costs. So So I'd just like to thank everyone who helped out with this project and would be happy to answer any questions at this time. Yes.
Quick question. I thought some of the extracts that you had over 100% on some of the lead biopsy study. I'm just not recognizing the results. I'm just curious as to why that was.
That's just the margin of error on the instrument that we use to analyze the extract is normally plus or minus 15%.
Okay.
So it was really just that.
So you mentioned that the diet phosphorus has a high impact on lead bioavailability. Is that the first research to your knowledge that indicated that?
It's the first time we've seen it in an in vitro method. When we look at just like diet studies, if I'm consuming, just as a person, like a lot of phosphorus in my diet, you can see in vivo decreases in bioavailability of different metals. But this is the first time that we've seen it in an in vitro method to model that. Yeah, we did two reps of each, and we had a really good repeatability with those. Pretty low standard deviation. Didn't include the numbers in here, but they were very repeatable results. Yes, they were. We got the samples and they had been previously spiked with a solution of lead acetate, and then all at 100 part per million, and then they were aged for several weeks because the compounds kind of change. They were spiked in their whole form and then later ground, and that's actually another error that we need to look at because that can introduce some variability into the study. But that's how the spiking was done. Thank you again.